It is the ConservativeDailyBlog.com show podcast. It's been a long time again, guys. We apologize for that. But, once again, I am Brian, coming at you on Sunday, August 16th, 2009. And, as usual, your guiding light in a world of absolute cold and darkness. Email address, conservativedailyblog@gmail.com, website, conservativedailyblog.com. So, a lot to get to today. And we've been checking your emails, and we're sorry if we haven't responded to them all yet, but thank you for your thoughts, comments, suggestions, requests, etc. Helps out a lot, that's for sure. And I also like to address something right now that I don't think I have touched on yet, is the music during the show, during like the intro, of course, and then of course during the snippets during the breaks. And you're saying like, "Whoa, what's that screaming?" And "Oh, I never heard this" and such. Well, it runs deeper than just noise, my friends. It is a style of music in which I enjoy very much, and it's deeper than just noise, and it's metal, of course, heavy metal. The intro song, though, well, yeah, well, yes, Mr. Producer, yes, we are going to do I'm going to dedicate a hour or segment of the show to my musical interests. If you enjoy the kind of music we've been playing at the breaks, and I'm sure you know many of the artists, so that'll be something you probably will enjoy. I'll just tell you what the intro song is, because that's the question we get the most. The intro music is a band called As I Lay Dying. They happen to be a Christian metalcore band. Metalcore is a genre of metal music, core being hardcore blended together with traditional elements of metal. They are a Christian band, which might surprise some of you. The style of music doesn't, when one hears the style of music, one wouldn't typically place a set of values behind it, just because of the nature of the whether it's the aggression or the loudness of the style. But yes, they are a great, great band. Perhaps I'm gonna stay definitely one of my favorite bands. Seen them before, great live band, and I would be surprised if many of you haven't heard of them. They are quite successful. Yeah, they headlined many of the major tours, like Ozfest, for example, Ozzy Osbourne. They have the main stage with bands such as Iron Maiden, Ozzy Osbourne, Black Label Society, bands that most of you have heard of, I'm sure of, because of classic rock, and they date back well beyond my years even, but they do have a second stage at those major metal festivals like Ozfest. Of course, they didn't have it this year, but the past 15 years they've had Ozfest, which is a festival in which bands, like I say, Ozzy Osbourne, Iron Maiden, bands that date way back play. So they have that. They have those bands on the main stage, but then they have a second stage for lesser known independent underground bands. And As I Lay Dying happens to headline such stages, and I'm sure if they would have had it this year, and As I Lay Dying committed to the tour, they very well might be on the very same stage sharing with Ozzy Osbourne, amongst other classic, well-known bands. So this isn't some obscure, random garbage I'm pulling out of nowhere, but like I say, don't want to spend time on it now. I will dedicate a show to it in the very near future for all of you who are of interest and maybe just want to explore a new genre you've never heard of, and I'm sure the first one I would do, I'd make a very accessible hour to attract fans, newer fans to the style of music. So, anyways, I'd like to get into politics now. A lot happened today, as many of you know by now. Apparently, they are dropping the public option from the healthcare plan. So before I discuss it, I'll let you hear it in full context today. John King, State of the Union, and Kathleen Sebelius, the Secretary of Health and Human Services, was on being interviewed by King. And this is how the interview went in full context. It's 3 minutes, so hang in there so you can hear the whole thing in its full context. So let's go with cut number 7 and go.
Thank you for joining us, Madam Secretary. I'd like to begin with something the president said at a town hall out in Colorado yesterday. Among the most contentious points of the debate, and something the president once described as critical, is the so-called government or public option to compete with private insurance companies. But if you listen to the president yesterday, he seemed to think maybe it's not so important.
The public option, whether we have it or we don't have it, is not the entirety of health care reform. This is just one sliver of it, one aspect of it. And by the way, it's both the right and the left that have become so fixated on this that they forget everything else.
Now, some, Madam Secretary, take that as a simple statement of fact, because you don't have the votes right now in the Senate for the public option. But some in this town, in Washington, especially House Democrats, more liberal Democrats, who have said that is critical, that they will not support health care without a public option, they take that as a message from the president that the votes aren't there, it's time to come up with a plan B.
Well, I think, John, that the president is absolutely right. This piece of the puzzle has had enormous focus, and the president continues to believe that it's good to have consumer choice, let people choose an option in the new marketplace, and it's good to have competition for the private insurers who will inherit a lot of new customers, and without competition, costs could skyrocket. In a monopoly system, it's not a great way to hold down costs. So he continues to be very supportive of some options for consumers. What we don't know is exactly what the Senate Finance Committee is likely to come up with. They've been more focused on a co-op, not-for-profit co-op as a competitor, as opposed to a straight government-run program. And I think what's important is choice and competition. And I'm convinced at the end of the day, the plan will have both of those. But that is not the essential element.
So is the president trying to say to, you know, the votes in the House, and you know the support among liberals, and they're angry. They think they're being sold out in the Senate. Is the president trying to say, I'm sorry, the votes aren't there, yet be prepared to embrace a co-op instead of a more robust public option?
Well, the way the process works, the Senate will have a version. The Help Committee has already come out in the Senate with a version that has a very robust public option. It's the same version that's in the House passed bills. What we don't know is the final committee structure, and I think the president is just continuing to say, let's not have this be the only focus of the conversation. Coverage for all Americans, lowering the crushing costs for everyone, making sure that we have new rules for insurance companies, that they can't dump people out of the marketplace if you get sick, that they can't drop your coverage based on a pre-existing condition, that you can't be priced out because you're a woman instead of a man, and gender discrimination won't be allowed to continue anymore. Those are really essential parts of the new program, along with choice and competition, which I think we'll have at the end of the day.
All right, so you can get it's okay to feel a little good today, because we are doing it. We are making a difference out there, and they are listening. Thank God. America's finally waking up to the imposter Obama, who is, in fact, a communist and a neo-Marxist. So after hearing this news, of course, I went over to the extreme left-wing blog, the Huffington Post, to read some of the comments. And this indeed is Obama's Waterloo, folks. And these liberal loons are not very happy at all. Let me just read you some of these. No public option is a tragedy. We've given up the single payer at the outset. What have we left? Not much. Everyone now agrees that President Obama's presidency is officially a failure. Hope and change has went down in flames. Another poster. Gitmo fail. Iraq withdrawal fail. Stimulus fail. Recovery plan fail. Cap and tax fail. Continuation of TARP fail. Afghanistan, whoa, look out, quagmire failure. Healthcare reform embarrassing? Fail. America under Obama? Fail. And then finally another one says, America won, socialism zero. So, it's not over, folks. They got the votes. They have the votes, as always, the filibuster-proof Senate, the 60 votes there for the Dems, and the House, quite a significant majority. So, they still can get some of those blue dogs to side with them on their plans for reform. But as you know, things still not laid out clearly or completely missing from the bill are things like the TARP reform, and the reason they left that out initially, of course, is the obvious, that the trial lawyers donate almost exclusively to the Democratic Party. So that was, let's just say, intentionally left out, to state the obvious. And of course, health savings accounts, tax credits, insurance reform, meaning to make it, that's a broad statement, I know, but reform meaning to stop denial of coverage to pre-existing conditions, making premiums more affordable by making the entry-level plans more accessible. Things of this nature are common sense type reform that the Democrats have pretty much denied to or even rejected amendments from Republicans, and such amendments that I know as of late have not been accepted and either vetoed completely or not presented to the Democrats are things like denying coverage for illegal aliens. Because as you know, on the next part of the agenda for the Obama machine is the immigration reform, which would grant amnesty or make the path to legalization very, 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 very easy for illegal aliens within our borders already. So that was the big one. And of course, the other big amendment that was flat out rejected for sure by Waxman's committee, who authored the bill that's out now, is the fact that congressional members are exempt from the health public option, that they'll keep their own plans for them and their families. And I do not think the Republicans would, a single Republican, and probably most of the Blue Dogs, wouldn't sign off on a plan that didn't force them into that option, because who in their right mind, what constituent of these representatives would support something that they themselves did not sign on to? It just shows the hypocrisy and their no confidence in the effects of the plan to work. So again, let's not get our hopes up. Continue to email your representatives, to call your representatives, to attend town hall meetings, to talk to your friends, to get on the message boards, to call the radio shows, to, I would, as a matter of fact, step up your efforts. There's no denying that they're continuing to push for things such like access to illegal aliens, because that will buy them continued support in the 2010 elections, because right now, man, they're looking quite bleak for Democrat hopefuls. I'm going to get some polling numbers together for the next segment to show you just how much footing the GOP has gained since all this town hall nonsense for them, in their minds nonsense, of course, not ours, has been going down. So this is a good time for America. Because Obama is failing, America is succeeding. That's the obvious, as you know. So common sense is coming, returning to America. Those who weren't previously involved in the happenings of Washington, who simply voted for Obama hoping that he would take care of everything, are now waking up to the reality of the radicalness of the man and the machine behind him. Scary, scary things, especially when you hear about this Rahm Emanuel and his brother Zeke, these brothers, I tell you, there's a lack of oxygen to the brain. There's some deficiency that's going on here that these people, these two individuals have, and it's scary. I mean, if you just read some of those writings by that Ezekiel Emanuel, man, it scares the hell out of me. How can anyone not see the danger of this man? So, and again, let's celebrate today, but tomorrow return back to the fight. So I have a lot to get to today, like I said, so I'm going to take my first break here, and I will return with some other news and polling data, some interesting, funny, and informative sound clips. You are listening to the Conservative Daily Blog podcast. Website, conservativedailyblog.com, email address, conservativedailyblog@gmail.com. I'll be right back. Yeah.
Town hall meetings is turning into the Jerry Springer show. And there are many Americans right now who are starting to fear for the safety of the President of the United States. All over health care reform. Folks, these people are psycho. That's what they are. Sometimes I think they want Obama to get shot. I do. I really think that there are conservative broadcasters in this country who would love to see Obama taken out. They fear socialism. They fear Marxism. They fear that the United States of America won't be the United States of America anymore.
Folks, that was failed talk show host Ed Schultz on his failure of a radio show, who has ratings so low, so down the gutter, that he encourages his audiences, his audience, his small and ever-shrinking audience, to record his television program on PMMSNSNLGBT, to record, to DVR the show, to TiVo the show, because the ratings are so low. And I guess TiVoing shows increases ratings. I didn't know that, but it's a failure of a network, and he has no hope for any kind of resuscitation, because he just admitted in that clip that he is indeed a communist, and he does want America to turn towards and fully embrace socialism, because we do have elements of socialism already, but he liked nothing more than to see the Declaration and Constitutions burning in a pyre for all to see. So, anyways, folks, I did promise you that polling data, and this is all via the Rasmussen reports. So 54% of all Americans now say that passing no health care reform is better than passing the plan currently proposed by the Congress. And 54% of the population prefers middle-class tax cuts to any type of new health care spending. So they'd rather have the tax cut than to change health care at all from its current form. And, of course, in the absence of any kind of new tax cuts, of course, with the healthcare spending, there already are additional taxes being levied on to the middle class and to all Americans when it comes to cigarettes, alcohol, and soda and other carbonated beverages. So they would rather not have those taxes in addition to new tax cuts instead of the healthcare spending. Now, also 32% favor single health payer, as opposed to 57% who oppose all single payer. So 57% are in so the majority of Americans oppose a single payer health care plan of any sort. And now they have some numbers of the public opinion and the general mood of America. Now 67% say that the Democrats are too partisan and moving further in that direction. 35% of U.S. Only 35% of the population says the U.S. is heading in the right direction. 44% to 41% favor the GOP dealing with any kind of health care reform. So this is not good for the Democrats, the Obama machine, for the left in general in America. It is now clear that Americans are waking up, seeing the true Obama for who he really is, a neo-Marxist, and yes, I firmly believe a communist, dealing with his mentors, his Saul Alinsky type tactics. This man is clearly foreign to the American way. This was too soon and too much for this man to take on. I look at Obama now and I see this man has aged significantly since he's taken office. I was going back just to study his presentation of his philosophy during the campaign in the debates and whatnot, and he sure looks significantly younger. He's aged at least 15 years. It's humorous at the same time, though. It's to be expected for a man who's never even ran a hot dog stand or fit any kind of payroll whatsoever in his lifetime. This is clearly a job he was not ready for. And if there is to be another czar appointed, I suggest that a resignation czar be appropriate for America now in terms of getting him out of office and giving it the power back to the people and choosing a candidate who stands on the side of America and not some other foreign, hidden Marxist agenda that is never compatible with the American way of life. I was thinking about it and thinking about former presidents and how they said, oh, when Jimmy Carter was elected, this and that, taxes increased, the recession, Ronald Reagan was elected and inherited a recession, such and such, gave tax cuts, Bill Clinton came in, such and such. But when Obama in the future is referred to his election and his inauguration as the first black president, 44th president, whatever you want to say, successor to George W. Bush, they'll refer to it as when Barack Obama came to power. You hear this about dictators such as when the Castro brothers came to power in Cuba, or Joseph Stalin came to power in the ex-Soviet Union, or Kim Jong-il came to power in North Korea. But with this man and his philosophy, who's more, let's say, in line with that than Thomas Jefferson or even Ronald Reagan or any conservative, libertarian, American ideals, he's more in line with the latter, the communist. So I think it would be appropriate if it was referred to as Barack Hussein Obama coming to power. And based on everything he's done thus far, I don't see how that could be refuted, because it's indeed against the will of the American people after we just looked at those poll numbers. I mean, who would refute that? I mean, come on. It's pretty obvious here. Unfortunately, I take no pleasure in saying any of this, as you know, folks. I don't know why I don't like that word, Mr. Producer. I don't like my radio voice either. Don't like it. I don't have a radio voice. But, yeah, so anyways, you have to understand that everyone listening to me now and all conservatives and all Americans, if you truly are loyal to America, it's not about hating Obama. It's not about hating the Democrats, Republicans, Independents. It's about America winning, America staying true to who she always has been. I mean, we've had many deviations in the past from our founding ideals, and we've gotten lost along the way, of course, but we don't want America we don't want Obama to fail as much as we want America to succeed. And I said it before, and I say it again, that America failing, or Obama succeeding, is America failing. America succeeding is Obama failing. So it's just good that finally people are waking up. Of course, George Bush had America somewhat lost confidence during the end of the Bush presidency. And of course, the transition of the messianic complex of Obama and the hope and change and all the campaign rhetoric brought this new spirit to America that now has died off and in favor of a newer spirit like we saw after 9/11. I'm sorry. After 9/11, America came together and reunited and was set on a path towards a greater pasture and a new horizon. And I think that same exact spirit in the aftermath of 9/11 has been regained, with less of a reliance on those we put in power, but more of a reliance, like I say, on the individual and we as a society working together as one towards achieving a greater America, improving America, not fundamentally transforming America, but improving her, because she's great already. She never needed modification. She needed improvement. And during the election, people were caught on to that. We are 5 days away from fundamentally transforming the United States of America. People seem to think that was in fact meaning improvement rather than complete overhaul and revolution. So it's good that that's cleared up now, and Obama is seen for who he truly is, and he'll continue to spout the Marxist agenda, but will continually be turned down by the American people, who have now awakened from the ashes of the failure and the end of the Bush presidency. Wow. Sorry for the incoherent thoughts back just a few seconds ago there. Sort of was on a rambling rant. Sort of lost focus, but now we've regained focus. So I want to reset by taking another break and coming back with a newfound power. So This will be break number two. Thank you, as usual, for staying with the podcast, as we are still in the infancy of this program and are dedicated to you, to bringing you a free, fresh perspective from a young conservative who loves America greatly and is worried about our future. So I've taken on the responsibility of learning as much as I possibly can, to staying informed, to staying up to date, and to staying on topic for you of giving my service in a way that I feel that isn't towards my best abilities and in best interest. So this will be break number two. We'll be right back after this.
Let me explain something to you. What I do for a living is very stressful, and I don't really want to do it anymore, and I don't want to become the enemy of the government, but I'm doing it for a number of reasons. I am the enemy of the government. They have me targeted, and they put in motion banning me in Britain in order to silence me here, and I don't know what's coming next. I am going to stay in radio. I'm going to make this commitment right now, as I can stay right now, as I feel right now, and as far as I can think right now. I will leave radio soon after being taken off the ban list. I will leave radio. Now, you may say, well, that's a plus and a minus for you. Many of you would say, well, I hope you don't get off the list because I don't want you to leave radio. I've done my work. I put in 15 years. I've written the bestsellers. Banned in Britain will be out in the next month for you to buy. My biography will be out next year from Ellis. I'm making this commitment right now. The day my name is removed from that list of murderers and terrorists, and I've cleared my name, and I've gotten my satisfaction from those evildoers in England, soon thereafter I will leave radio. You will not hear from me again. I will disappear. I will be like Johnny Carson with the white hat, hopefully with a number of years left to enjoy whatever's left of the suns for me, and however summers are left, and that'll be it. I'm going to leave. You'll never hear from me again.
So if you don't know who that was Michael Savage. He has the third most listened to radio talk show in America. He is third to Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity. And the reason I played that is because it really sums up the premise of the show. The fact is that these longtime conservative talk show hosts are getting up there in age. And even if you look at like the network, Fox News, or any of the other conservative outlets, whether it be radio, television, or the blogosphere, there's really no one under the age of 40 who is articulating conservatism these days. And that worries me greatly. And whether or not you agree with that, or whether you not think that's a problem, I certainly do think that it is a problem. And the reason for that, I really am not quite certain. I tend to blame it on the universities, of course, and the government media complex. The media, of course, being extremely, extremely biased, not doing their jobs, reporting selective news issues. But this is a problem. I really see it as a problem. You might say that there's enough hosts out there already doing a fine enough job getting or articulating conservatism, getting the news out there in an alternative manner to the news media and TV. But my philosophy is the more the better. And in this case, the more younger people out there articulating and talking about conservatism and founding principles and ideology, the better. And that, like I said before the last break, is what I am dedicated to doing. I'm dedicated to this program. The summer is coming to an end, and I am getting back into the study mode, because I am in a university and taking classes, but I feel that in doing that, I can be more dedicated to the show, because my days will have more structure, and I'll have more time to stay up to date between classes and such. So have no fear, stay with us, and we will keep bringing you the news, reviews, and other such information. So moving on, Rahm Emanuel. Now, we talked about him last show and about his influence in the White House and his gangster-like tactics. He's often compared to Al Capone, of breaking legs and going behind the scenes to reach out and, let's say, influence the ideas and ways and thinking even of congressional members, Senate members, House Representative members, etc. And just to recap, of course, this communist-like philosophy of this man. He is the brainchild, let's say, of the mandatory civilian service. And you have that audio clip. All right, go ahead and play it.
Congressman Rahm Emanuel has been picked by Barack Obama to be his White House chief of staff.
And now you have a book with the ambitious title of The Plan. The word universal comes through a lot. Universal will scare some people. They will think big government program. The idea of universal citizen service. Mm-hmm. You have to participate.
Citizenship is not an entitlement program. It comes with responsibilities. Everybody somewhere between the ages of 18 and 25 will serve 3 months of basic training and understanding in a kind of civil defense. That universal sense of service, somewhere between ages 18 and 25, will give Americans, once again, a sense of what they are to be American and their contribution to a country and a common experience. And you look at World War II, now that was a draft, but this is not a draft, it's a universal service. It is not an accident that we started our big march towards civil rights and expanding post-World War II because the country came through an experience together.
So is this compulsory then?
Well, you have to, in the sense it's a required of everybody, 18 to 25, 3 months, because I think anytime somebody serves their country in some capacity, we're going to be stronger for it.
Citizenship is not an entitlement program. It's not a draft. So don't get that confused. It's not a draft. It's mandatory. You'll be required to do it between the ages of 18 and 24, because anytime you serve your country in some capacity, we're better for it. It's no accident. One day we'll wake up and Obama will come on our TV set and he'll give this following statement to the youth in America. America, we have come to a new crossroads. We have come to a time when we will no longer look outward in hopes that our problems can be solved without taking the responsibility ourselves. Young Americans will now come to appreciate the hard work and sacrifice of our founding fathers in their path toward attaining a sense of pride and understanding. Don't look at it as a service. Don't look at it as a private workforce. Rather look at it as being a team. On a team. On the side of America. Team America. Together, we, as one, building a stronger and better America. Oh, man, what you can see on my producer's face right now is just, he's in awe. I swear that was all free verse. I really do. Just in my head all the time, that voice, it's on TV every single day. It doesn't go away. Oh, God. It just comes out. I hear it in my head, and I cannot shut it out. I try to shut it out. I swear, it's just impossible to do. So we have that you have that article handy from New York Times and Rahm Emanuel. All right. So as I was saying, there was an article written in the New York Times about Rahm Emanuel's actual involvement and his more involvement than one might think in the decisions being made in the White House and his, I would say, gangster-like tactics in persuading people to go along with the Obama plan. So So in the article, it said 7 months after moving into his office in the West Wing, Mr. Emanuel is emerging as perhaps the most influential White House chief of staff in a generation. But with his prominence in almost everything important going on in Washington comes a higher degree of risk. As the principal author of Mr. Obama's Do Everything at Once strategy, and to go off for a second, of course, his famous quote of, never let a crisis go to waste. Back to the article, he stands to become a figure of consequence in his own right if the administration stabilizes the economy and financial markets, overhauls the healthcare system, and winds down one war while successfully prosecuting another. The caricature of Mr. Emanuel as a profanity-spewing operative has given way to a more nuanced view as a profanity-spewing operative with a keen understanding of how to employ power on behalf of a new president with relatively little experience in Washington. Although relentless, differential to the president, Mr. Emanuel is clearly more chief than staff. While some predecessors husband their authority, leased it and friends said he believed the more someone used power, the more power the person had. He knows how to pull levers of influence in Washington, raising money, mobilizing interest groups, and harvesting the latest policy ideas from research groups. At the same time, his relentless campaign-style approach sometimes leaves some colleagues worried they spend too much time reacting to events. And at times, it seems as if Mr. Emanuel is White House Chief of Staff, Political Director, Legislative Director, and Communications Director all roll into one. He has fingers in almost every decision, like who gets invited to social events at the White House and how to shape economic and foreign policy. And it's said that he carries a note card in his pocket with a list of things to accomplish and marks them off obsessively. He requires cabinet secretaries in all West Wing departments to submit written reports each week and returns them with intense marked-up notes in the margins. So there you go. Further evidence to suggest that we have gangsters running America. And this is no surprise to any of you. The Chicago machine has been doing this for decades, since Al Capone himself ran the city, had the cops in his back pocket, or had the special interests in his back pocket, or who had the power of the people, or of the authority of the government, or in the ruling body, ruling class, in their complete control and their realm. Fortunately, although to Obama's great dismay, we have great documents in which the powers of the federal government are clearly laid out and clearly decisive and handcuffing them to to the words in the documents to limit their ability to govern at the will of the people. So they hate these documents very much. They'd very much like them to be undone or to be nullified, I'll say. So I hate to say this, but does one ever think that someday we'll have a second constitutional convention, that the great American experience will be abandoned, and that it was nice while it lasted, and it was a great experiment and a great experience for those who had an opportunity to live under the rule that these great documents provided? But I mean, Obama himself says this, folks. This is not made up. This is actually has some basis in reality, because the man himself says they reflected a great time in America, but the essential constraints the founders put in the Constitution and Bill of Rights really didn't go far enough. And in his case, he would like to redistribute wealth, but has to do it through other means and other ways, because he can't directly do it, because he wouldn't want to be called out as being an unconstitutional president. But he wants to do this. He wants to do it. And don't give me any kind of neo-conservative. Don't give me any, like, don't throw any garbage at me, because you can't rewrite the words the man himself has said. The man is a neo-Marxist. If it walks like a Marxist, talks like some Marxist, it is a Marxist. There's no two ways about that. You cannot deny the fact that this man is clearly alien to the country. And I'm not going to get into the birth certificate, so don't get your hopes up. I don't care where he was born at this point, because it doesn't matter. He is the most powerful man in the world, and he has the federal government of the United States of America behind him. They print birth certificates. They print money. They print bonds. They can print any kind of birth certificate that they want. They can produce as legitimate as the original thing. I don't care what you say about that, because it's true and you know it. I think at this point, it's counterintuitive. It just is to go, we can beat these people on ideals. And we are. And the polls reflect that. So anyways, I guess I'm running long, so I'm going to take another break. But we need to continue what we're doing. And I've been getting a lot of emails over the past few hours for some reason. I guess the start of the week, people are wondering why I haven't done a podcast in a while. It's great to see it. And we're trying to get back to you as quick as we possibly can. I myself am reading all the emails, if not responding to them directly. We have exceeded 10,000 subscribers to our podcast. We thank you very much for that. And, you know, some of the emails have been saying, like, who are you to be talking about any of these things? And, you know, you're right, and I totally agree with you. And as I said before, if we have a president who has no experience and who has the least amount of experience as any president's ever had, or who has ability to ascend to the level he has, then why can't anyone do anything or not be qualified enough to do anything? I mean, come on, let's be real about that. I'll just tell you myself that I spent a great deal of this summer. I've read hundreds of books on, of course, the subject of America and political science and philosophy and history and fiction, nonfiction, on every possible thing you could ever imagine. I say that although I don't have a degree to show for each and every field of study I have been in, that I could get several degrees at the lib university level that could prove my competence in subjects. But you'll have to go and take my word for it. It's been at the behest of a social life, I must say. I have a good life. I enjoy my life. I love my life. But there's more important things sometimes than sitting on the couch watching pornography and sports on TV. I mean, let's be real here. An educated mind is a powerful mind, an influential mind, and a successful mind. And it works your way the best, put yourself in the best possible position for attaining success. So I hope I've proved somewhat of my worth thus far, but every day is a challenge. I never accept anything at face value. I'll take any challenge. I'll take on any challenge, I mean, with the full effort of succeeding, I'll have to say. So, and I'm glad that I see that we have one of the top podcasts out there right now in terms of this format that we are pursuing. So it's regardless of success, it's the nature of what we're doing, and we're glad to be doing it, and we're glad that people are with us in this. So I'm going to take break number 3 right now, and I'll be back to wrap things up. You are listening to the Conservative Daily Blog Show podcast. I'm Brian, and we'll be right back.
The strong. Bristol Palin went on her abstinence tour. I think that it is not realistic for this generation of people to be just plain abstinence. I think we need to have sex education with condoms and birth control, et cetera, et cetera. And I think if the Republican Party just says abstinence only is the only way to be, then we're going to lose a lot of young voters. And I think I would never want to practice anything I didn't preach. And it can be a party for a 24-year-old pro-sex woman. It can be. I just think that we have people that are in this party that are hijacking it and trying to make it even more extreme.
All right, turn her off. Turn her off. I'm tired of this. I really am tired of this moderate, wishy-washy, liberal light stuff. It is, in fact, her father and the moderates who would love very much so to hijack the party, as well as the American left. They would love the moderates, the John McCains, the Colin Powells, the Olympia Snows, the Lindsey Grahamnesties to hijack the party, because they know that they'll win every time. As a perfect example, Republican GOP nominates a moderate liberal light, John McCain, for the 2008 ticket and lose, because if you have a choice between a liberal light and a leftist liberal, why not just go with the whole show, the whole deal there? And that's what happened. And as a result, the GOP paid the price. And I'm tired. I'm sick and tired of people like Colin Powell saying people want to pay more taxes, people want more government, and because the man himself's a hypocrite. John McCain is the candidate he describes, yet he fully endorses Barack Hussein Obama at a key point during the election, and totally throws McCain, his lifelong friend of 30 plus years, under the bus to support Obama, and meant the endorsement to hurt his good friend John McCain at the most critical point of the election. And it was because McCain was just only slightly down in the polls, and the economy had just taken a turn for the worse, and he was just still hanging on to that somewhat close lead at the end there. And then Powell, of course, endorsed him. He's like, oh, Republican, prominent Republican, Colin Powell endorses Senator John McCain, or Senator Barack Obama. And he intended to hurt him at that time. And Colin Powell is a disgrace to the party, as is many of the currently in office Republicans. And he in no way stands for what the Republican Party should be. And Meghan McCain, as you just heard in that clip, has no future in this party. And no one should be supporting her in any way, shape, or form, because she is a worse version of her dad. She's a liberal. Now you say, oh, well, she's Republican and she wants to take the GOP new places. Well, the liberals of yesterday are the conservatives of today, and the liberals of today are the neo-Marxists, or liberals of yesterday are the neo-Marxists of today, as the conservatives are the liberals today. So we have an article from the New York Post posted up on conservativedailyblog.com, and the actual article is titled "Meghan McCain Blonde Bombshell: John McCain Wounded the GOP. His daughter is out to finish the job." And I actually came up with the title for it myself. That's the title that you'll see on the page when you go to it. It's titled "Every Rose Has Its Thorn," and for the GOP, it's Meghan McCain. I don't know. I thought it was kind of cool. Kind of summed it up pretty well there, I thought. So go and check that out. Read that article just so you can see the disgrace that the Republican Party has become over the last few years, but itching, and it's looking, showing hopeful signs, showing vital signs that we can move back to where Ronald Reagan had envisioned us, and then also incorporate founding ideologies, some libertarian ideologies, but not dismissing where we've come. It's important to realize what has happened during the Bush years and such, and not to lose sight of that towards reshaping a brighter future for the party and for the movement. I myself, as I said, am an independent conservative, fully independent, reject George W. Bush in his second term and what he did at the end of his presidency. But I'm also not stupid. I don't think there's a place for a third party at this point. And it's silly to turn all hope to a third party. Because in doing so, we will lose. We will lose profoundly. I think that there's places for candidates like Ron Paul, Libertarian, to run as a Republican, and then from there, to take that and then run from there. Not saying I endorse Ron Paul because I don't, because I disagree with him on issues such as foreign policy and perhaps some social issues. But anyways, I think that a third party at this point is counterintuitive. Where before a third party had helped the Republicans when, like, say, Ralph Nader and the Green Party ran and took votes away from, what was it, Clinton and then Gore, or Clinton, Gore, and such. So that is what I foresee possibly happening for the GOP and having votes subtracted from them because of that. So let's not lose sight. There's still hope for this party. We're rebuilding. We're going through. We have an opportunity like we've never had before because of the failure of this administration and the continual failure of this administration. So this will be an issue we will talk about much in the future, because as things unfold, as things take shape and new things pop up, it'll be debated and we will be along for the ride, and that's for certain. So hope you enjoyed this broadcast. I'm glad to have not have waited so long to do another podcast. I'm sorry. Things were kind of getting a little bit messy there the last few weeks in terms of my scheduling and what I've been wanting to do. Another problem being that the website hasn't been up to date as much as I'd like it to be, and I've hired a few new people to keep that up to date, because if the site's up to date, then I'm more willing to do a podcast, because the site is really the vehicle for this podcast. Without one, we wouldn't have the other. So, and also, my producers reminded me, we are still looking for bloggers, columnists, as you know, the same format that any other major conservative columnist follows, Michelle Malkin, Ann Coulter, John Stossel, etc. And we're looking for writers exclusively for the Conservative Daily Blog. We have myself and my good friend Chris, he's very much an expert in the field of the healthcare, because he himself works within the current healthcare system and has studied social medicine in Britain, such places as Britain, Canada, and France. So if you haven't read his pieces yet, it's still very relevant to what's happening today. So why don't you go check that out on the right-hand column of our site, conservativedailyblog.com. And I have translated my columns from Facebook over to the site. So you could check all those out. I think they're a little bit longer than your traditional column, but I think you'll enjoy the read nonetheless. So I think we've tackled everything for today. Once again, the website, www.conservativedailyblog.com. Email address, conservativedailyblog@gmail.com. I am Brian, and I would like to thank you for joining us today on August 16th, 2009. We will be back to you shortly. In the meantime, God bless America, our God-given liberty, and our unalienable rights in this great country, in this great experiment that is America. And I will see you next time. This is Brian from Conservative Daily Blog. Good night, America.